Today, my guest is Michelle Hollingbrooks. Michelle is returning for part two of our exploration of the evolution of equine-facilitated therapy. Today, we're going to talk about just that, the evolution of this field and how it came to be. We're going to talk about the roles and responsibilities of the horse, of the therapist, of the facilitator, and of the client who is participating in the program. We also will touch on how we can prepare our horses to work within such a program, or whether or not it might be appropriate for them. If you haven't yet listened to part one, I strongly suggest you do so, for it will give you an incredible context in this conversation. And also, if you've not reviewed the two interviews I did with Michelle in season one in 2022, of this podcast, I really suggest you go back and listen to Michelle's compelling life story and her evolution in the field. I'm certain you will find it very helpful.
Welcome to Interspecies Evolution. The purpose of this podcast is to highlight human consciousness and how our self-awareness can lead to our honoring animals as conscious beings as well. We have gathered more than 36 people with unique experiences and education, inviting them to share their journeys and how their relationships with animals have changed along the way. If you are seeking inspiration on your own journey of awakening, or simply want to improve your relationships with animals, we invite you to join us because it is time for interspecies evolution. Here's your host, Jenny Jablonski.
Welcome back to the podcast, Michelle.
Thank you. I am really enjoying these chats and these conversations and unpacking some really big, beautiful questions that we have been exploring together. So thank you for having me back. And I'm excited to dive into today's part two.
As am I. As we were talking before we hit record, we realized we named the podcast Exploring the Evolution of Equine Facilitated Therapy, but we didn't yet explore the evolution. And so I'd like to ask you to share with the listeners your perspective, because you really were there in the beginning when these first certificated programs were being created.
You know, we used to call them the grandma mares and the field left. And so then I'm like, what does that make me now? But yeah, I have a very interesting, because of the story that I shared with you of my original real experience as basically a participant, but without being in an official program of working with horses from a what would be deemed a therapeutic riding perspective into the horses then as companions and supporting me on my own. With my own journey with them, more as from that mental health standpoint. Basically, I've been working in this industry since 1990. Sometimes people get very polarized. I call it religious in this world about their certifications and everything else like that. And I'm going to try to stay non-denominational about this because I believe there's some pros and cons in all the different ones that are offered out there. And it really is an individual choice. At that time, PATH was still more oriented in the West Coast and was working its way to the East Coast. And I was in Northern Virginia when I was really, really sick. And so there wasn't a program that was available officially yet. So it was just the riding barn kind of making it up as they went and doing their thing. And I share more about that in that episode. By the time I was a senior in high school, a therapeutic barn had opened up. And so that was my first exposure to the real, quote unquote, version of how to work with that. I thoroughly loved it and enjoyed it and enjoyed working within the program. And I just kind of did my thing behind the scenes with the horses that I was working with. And for quite frankly, even with the kiddos, because I could communicate with them and see them from a different level, from different filters. And we talk about that in the second episode about exploring human consciousness. So if people haven't listened to that one, they can go understand when I say filters, what I mean of the different levels of a person. and a bean. And so my first exposure really was through that door, through therapeutic writing, through working with a very path-centered model. And at the time, PATH was starting to play around with this idea, which was called Equine-Facilitated Mental Health and Learning, or EFMA at the time. It was a sub-bar within their program. So it was like this little specialty thing that you could go and kind of play around with this idea of it. It wasn't very separate. And at the same time, there was this other beautiful family, the McCormicks, and they were starting to develop. There was some crossover between what they were discovering and working with from the mental health, because she was a psychotherapist, and bringing them out to the barn. And she was working with girls in a residential program and starting to interlace that with PATH. Now, fast forward to the end of the 90s, and this is when another big company came forward. And so when that one came forward, it was saying, hey, we've got a little bit, we're going to only focus on mental health and on learning. We're not going to try to do the able-bodied as much as you can riding for people, where we're working with horses to try to really be riding focused, where we're teaching riding skills and we're trying to make it as inclusive as possible and for a kid to be as independent as possible in the sport of riding. Those are all in air quotes. So the secondary benefits of the sport of, quote, riding is that you have self-confidence, problem-solving skills, following of directions, the physical development of keeping your core tight, proprioceptic and vestibular coordination and regulation. So all of these beautiful things happen when we're riding a horse and reaching and doing things and interacting. The side benefits that happen when you're, quote, riding a horse are the things like social engagement and feeling good about yourself and being able to interact with people. If you remember my original story, you know, that I figured out really fast if I wanted the human that was holding the horse to let the horse move when I was talking to Schedule and Schedule was trying to move because he could hear my thoughts say, please move, but the words didn't come out of my mouth. The human held Schedule until some type of a guttural noise came out of my mouth that mimicked whatever the heck they were doing, which was difficult for me to do because I was deaf at the time. But once I tried to do whatever they wanted me to do, then magically they let go of the horse and I started to be able to move. But I knew in order for me to get anywhere I wanted to go, I had to go through the human. So that's also another, quote, carrot that happens in therapeutic riding. If the kid wants to partner with the horse the way they want to, they have to hear to the leader, and then they have bumpers and sidewalkers to help them stay on the horse. And ideally, in a therapeutic riding format, you're trying to have the least amount of people needed for the person to ride as independently as possible. So they're gaining that, the skills that happen with any sport that we're in and we try to do it. It just happens to be through the partnership of horses. Well, in the late 1990s, the evolution of the field, and I'm trying to keep this super condensed, is it started to realize that people, when they were working with horses, could have another benefit. So this whole field exploded called experiential learning and experiential therapy, which is challenged by choice. This is when ropes courses came out. This is when people started to do teamwork developments and other stuff like that. And that whole entire industry just like went whoosh. Well, and then people had horses and they had them on ranches and they had them in different things like that. And they were using them maybe for work ethics within locked facilities or residential facilities to help teach responsibility and caretaking and stuff like that. And they went, oh, well, let's use them. And that is the quote, use them as the same thing. It's like a ropes course. Horses are stubborn. They don't always do what we want them to do, you know. And what makes them do what we want? Well, if they do teamwork. So they just picked up the same concepts from experiential learning and therapy and placed it into horses. What then happened is it made a lot of sense. And it also made a lot of sense because people realized that not everybody wanted to ride. And a lot of people who have a lot of trauma, they don't actually want to get on the horse because that's really scary to them. All of a sudden, all these horses that couldn't be used because they were no longer rideable, all of a sudden now had a new job. And if they had a new job, that means that they could pay for themselves and people would have money to be able to take care of them and do other things like that. Plus, they could be able to help other people. So this whole other branch started to open up that was independent of riding. So there was already therapeutic riding, there was hippotherapy, and hippotherapy, by the way, I can't go into the whole gamut of this, but that is where you take a PT or an OT or a speech pathologist, and you are using the horse to bring forward movements in the bodies that have a specific medical goal. So in those situations of hippotherapy, the horse very much is being utilized as a tool similar to an apparatus or something else like that, but with the carrot that the kid ideally wants to do it because the kid likes the horse. And again, if you do it properly with the right horse and they have understanding, it's not a bad thing. But where it can get really scary is if the horse doesn't have the consent, like we talked about in part one. So you have these different gamuts. And then there's this whole other gamut that's called driving, which is just like what you would think of, which is people who couldn't be able to ride a horse independently, they opened it up to driving. And that's where they're in a little cart doing their little thing. Again, it can be quite beautiful, but it also all depends on how the horse is showing up for that conversation. Just like this whole other gamut side of the mental health and the learning, where you're bringing a horse in as a quote, the original term in this whole field was facilitated, and then it switched to assisted, and then it switched to guided. And I complicated and muddied the waters up because I brought in the term and trademarked partnered. And because that to me is where this field really needs to go if it's going to bring itself into a true version of consent. It is a partnership. It's not facilitated, where all of that weight is placed on just one being in this equation, and it's not guided by some godlike force that the horse is responsible for channeling and then bringing into a session. And it's also not just assisted by the horse like it was a wheelbarrow or a bale of hay. If we're going to, why are we partnering with horses? Why are we asking them to come into a session? And what is their job and what is their role? So in the late 1990s is when these other programs that wanted to focus solely on the mental health and learning started to come forward. And they were pitching, we're not doing riding, we're doing where the person is working with the horse on the ground, they're doing these activities with them, they're doing these team building based activities based off of picking up the same framework from a ropes courses and team buildings and bringing it into the arena with the horses. So they were very similar activities as you would find in a ropes course. You just found them, instead of using planks on the ground of how to get across the ground, now you're inviting the horse to get from point A to point B. Well, as you can imagine, where's the soul of the horse in this equation? Where's the piece of that says, is the horse working with them or are they a tool or a prop? And this started to create a lot of controversy in the field of how to proceed and how to work forward. And so as this continued, pockets of us within the field were having these conversations, but the bigger version, it was still really hard to break through in the early 2000s because it challenged the status quo of what a horse was actually capable of. And so it started to create this massive divide between the camps of that the horses were these magical beings that healed us. And then this one, then the slingshot of this whole other example of the horses are just that. They're no different than of any other props that you would bring in to assist people, like sand tray therapy or this, that, or the other. And they were just happened to be movable. So you could label them, you could paint them, you could put whatever you wanted on them, and they would take on that metaphor and they would represent that. The person was using them as a moving metaphor versus as a relationship. And this divide kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it sprung out a whole bunch of little companies that, you know, again, I'm trying to say non-denominational, that have different points of view on that. And you can find that in the literature that are out there, from Tao of Equus to Horse Sense for the Human Heart to, you know, to my book. You can see this divide starting to happen in this controversy and how people end up in very entrenched in their own camps. But what happens is nobody, I think, has the answer. So some people start to say, oh, we're the science-backed program, or we're the horse-backed program, we're the this-backed. And what they lost in all of this, as this was evolving throughout the decades now, is the central question, which I would love to invite this field to come into, that is the evolutionary question, which is, okay, how do we do this that honors each being as a sentient being? And if we honor each being as a sentient being, what does that look like? Well, what it looks like to me is partnership. What it looks like is informed consent. And what it looks like is each being understands what their role and their responsibility is and has the ability to say yes, no, and maybe, and to also then offer their brilliance, their light, their charisma, their charism, their individual soul purpose through that vocation, just like you do through your vocation as an animal communicator, as a soul whisperer, you know, and what I do as whatever hat I put on, I'm able to breathe my life's purpose into that. But I also need to have the freedom and the choice of how I show up in a situation. Otherwise, I can't do what I naturally do as well as I could do it.
Yes, and I find it interesting that when I was younger, the first version of Ginny was I was an accountant. So I was in real estate investment in the 80s. I was a financial controller. And I'm very aware that in the late 80s and early 90s, there was a horrific real estate crash, stock market crash. A lot of people's wealth was tied up in real estate and the stock market. And so people were looking for alternative ways to make money. And people that had horses that really now couldn't necessarily afford them were looking for ways to use them in a way that would at least provide for their care. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm really seeing the correlation now that you're sharing this chronology.
And I think that as a whole, humans, let's put like kind of humans evolution, we're starting to remember the spirits. I mean, shamanism has exploded in the last, you know, 10 plus years, especially, you know, like we're starting to remember that there is a spirit within a spirit of everyone, that we are more than just our outer quote shell, that we are body, mind, and spirit. The body mind phenomenon exploded right along with the equine therapy model as it was growing and really influenced it. And it got really good with body and mind. It got really good with having, and there's some great research that has been done, not only by HeartMath, but other leaders in the field who are really research oriented and have been able to bring in some quantitative data that says, okay, wow, the horse's electromagnetic field does impact ours. And it can bring harmony to it. The horse's movement creates this movement in the human body and mimics the human gait of a walk. So they got really comfortable in bringing the science in from what the horse was doing to manipulate the human's field and be a benefit to it. And even now, as the social engagement system and attachment theory and polyvagal theory have come forward, yet again, people are taking these theories that are science and evidence backed and placing them into the equine world. And the problem is because the horses have a vagal nerve. Yep. They are social engagements. Oh my gosh. Shocker. You know, like they're seeking cues of safety. They're seeking to have a sense of connection and an attachment as a way to provide a sense of survival and to allow their system to downregulate itself and to calm and to seek center. And oh, wow, the human system is doing that too. And when you mix those two together, they get to work through challenges by, you know, different activities, or they just can breathe together. And that equals, quote, harmony in the system. Well, those are all really great mechanical pieces. But what else is present? What else is happening? And what I love to tell people about the story with schedule is, if I didn't have a connection to schedule, and I didn't feel his soul talking to mine, I would have never learned to walk again. Those pathways in my body would not have fired just because his body moved my body. The pathways in my system healed themselves because there was a heart-to-heart connection. There was an openness and a willingness for both of us to come together. And actually, the humans were getting in the way, you know, like in that scenario. All well-meaning, but they had their agenda. They wanted me to talk. They wanted me to reach out. They wanted me to sit up straight. They wanted me to do something they were doing, but the reason why I was able to heal my physical, emotional, mental body had absolutely nothing to do with those very well-meaning goals. And it had everything to do with the fact that my body was open to the support coming from another system and working with me.
Speaking of the other systems, I can feel your horses coming in. I can feel my horses coming in, horses I've owned in the past, horses you've owned in the past. And I'm sitting here on the verge of tears because of what I'm going to say next. Our society has had thousands of years to develop. In the U.S., a few centuries. Mm-hmm. And how do we as a society, human to human, develop laws, codes, standards for the benefit of all life? Let's just take fire code, for example, because I have some experience with that. I volunteered for 13 years when I lived in California in the Fire Safe Council, and I wrote grants, and I knew more about fire code than I ever and hazardous fuels reduction than I ever wanted to know. But one of the things I heard so many fire professionals say over and over, fire code was developed because people died. Mm-hmm. Every new code, every new law came about because someone died. And in science, there's a saying that science evolves as scientists die. Mm-hmm. Because the influencers, the change makers that have been alive for generations pass away, and then people with new ideas can come out. I mean, you see where I'm going with this? Mm-hmm. And the horses are asking, when will they have representation? When will they have someone stand up and say, we need some protective code, some standard of care for the horses themselves? And then we get into the very gray area of whose opinion should one respect or listen to? This mm-hmm. is it's a sticky soup.
I think all of what humanity is facing right now is this is not problem, solution anymore. We're not at that across the board, and we're definitely not at that in this particular industry, and we're not at it in the horse industry or the animal welfare industry at all. These are predicaments. These are going to require new ways of being with ourselves, with each other, new ways of interacting and releasing of some old ways that just no longer, you can't fit it in the equation anymore. And so part of what the evolution, in my opinion, it's a very humble opinion as one person who has just witnessed it and worked, it was my job within the different organizations I have worked as network coordinators, as training coordinators, trying to help people put out more fires. I was a fire coach. So, because people would come out of trainings, they would come out of conferences, and they would feel even more like shamed and blamed and like, oh my gosh, to the point where they were like, am I supposed to do anything in a session? Am I just supposed to open the gate? And can I even say hi to a client? And then I have horses out there, and whatever the heck happens, happens. Am I allowed to give a safety chat with this, or am I not allowed to give a safety chat? If I ask a question, then all of a sudden I'm interrupting some mythical thing that might be happening, or projecting my personal point of view onto something to the point where, oh my gosh, the horse has to remain haltered. I mean, these are the extremes, and you can never take a halter off, and they have to remain attached to a trained volunteer or a person, and there can never be autonomy between the client and the horse. You know, these really bogged down that took the soul, the life out of the whole reason why we would want to ask a horse to come into this. It gets really sticky, really gummy, really fast. And if I think I referenced in part one that I was at an animal welfare conference and presenting with big PhDs and all these letters and things behind, and it was feeling like you were horrible, a horrible, horrible person if you owned a horse with less than 20 some odd acres and that had different habitats and availability to them, and that you asked them to do anything, then just do that. You know, like if you even thought about riding, oh my gosh, you're the worst person on the face of the earth. And if you thought about, you know, and so it just was shaming all of these really beautiful people that were coming to this conference, really trying to understand, to do better, to know better, to try to give their horses some different. And the gap just felt so incredibly wide. People were like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. You know, like, I don't even know. I just have to go home and open the gate and hope my horse survives. You know what I mean? Like, the reality is we've domesticated this species to this point. A lot of them are just like, you know, they would not do too well. I mean, I just came off of 3 days without power. You know, and it was sub-zero temperatures, you know, like that is not something that they had the capacity to know how to deal with or to work with, right? I think it can feel daunting, it can feel sticky, and it can feel like, I don't know which talking head I'm supposed to listen to. And I always offer this to my clients, come back to your heart. Your heart has the answers. Because your heart, if we can help it clear and help it settle and come from a place of curiosity versus fear, or, well, I have to get it to work this way because this is the way somebody said to do it, then you're boxing it in and you won't hear the guidance of what needs to come forward for you, for your horses. And so all of a sudden, if our hearts can start to lead this conversation, we can start to come up with new ways of being that honors the horse having a voice, because the horse has a voice if you can get into your heart, because that's where the horse is going to talk to you through. It's not your head. It's not them blinking and watching their body language. That's giving you cues. Where you're going to hear them is through the heart. So to me, the third wave of what really needs to happen in this industry is to put in the third leg of the body, mind, and there's this other thing called the soul. And if we don't figure out how to put this soul in, then we will continue to use horses as slaves and commodities.
Some people believe their heart is telling them that the horses are here to take on the trauma of humans.
This is where I'd love to switch gears into the role of the horse in the therapy session. I always like to start this conversation when I teach this by asking a few questions. And I love for people to, I don't answer right away. I let them journal. I invite them to go around the arena. They can go outside. They can go sit by the creek, whatever. And then we come back. Since we don't have that capacity, I'm going to invite you to do the same thing as you're listening to us. Pause us. Answer. Unpause us. Have a back and forth with us as we're chatting. If you think about it, we're going to pick the field because there are different types of equine assisted whatevers. We're going to just take it into a mental health session because that's the easiest. And so if everyone could just put their viewpoint through that lens, I think that would be the healthiest for all of us and the simplest. So in a mental health session, let's say that you have a client who is a 13-year-old girl in the foster care system. And she's had attachment issues and she has trust issues and she's got some behavioral issues at school. She's acting out a little bit. And overall, she's, you know, about ready to blow out of her next foster care placement if her, quote, behaviors at school don't come into compliance. So she gets referred out to your program, your happy little barn. You're either working with a mental health professional or you are both a dual equine person and a mental health person. I don't really care. I don't have a dog in this fight, whether you work as a two-person team or a one-person team, with as long as you have the qualifications in some way, shape, form, or fashion to ethically have that session. What is that job? When I walk out to that pasture and select a horse, that's in air quotes, what am I asking that horse to do in that session? What is its job description? And if you can, just kind of start to think in your mind, well, does it need to be present and available? Does it need to be safe? Okay, if it needs to be safe, what does safe mean? What does that mean? What is a safe horse? I told you I was going to give you a whole lot more questions than answers, but these are the questions that are going to lead your heart. What is a safe horse? Does that mean the horse says yes to everything that little girl asked that horse to do? Does that mean the horse has the right to say no to her because that might hurt her feelings? Does that horse have the right to get scared in that session and to react as a horse would react when it's scared? Or is it supposed to react differently? Is that horse's job to make that little girl feel better? Is that horse just, oh my gosh, I can feel all the horses. Okay. I'm just asking them to back up a little bit. Give us some space to chat. Okay. Is it the horse's job to make you look good so that you magically in 50 minutes had this kid go from coming in pissed off and angry and upset and having a referral at school to, oh, she does great at school and no more referrals? Is that its job? Is its job to challenge her, to get her to look at her stuff so she can understand why she's acting out in school? What is that horse's job when I ask it to come into that arena?
Well, I'm crying. I can hear the horses yelling.
Yeah.
Two words. Balance and partnership. Mm-hmm. To help us remember what it feels like to be balanced and to engage in a balanced partnership with another living being.
Yeah. And how do they do that job? What's it going to look like? If you hear them, you can answer, but everybody else can do, like, because Jenny did answer the question. That is literally their job, to help open up a sense of internal balance within the system, and then also help open up this idea of a partnership, of communication, of connection, of curiosity, of working through tough stuff, of not bundling up into just their own inner world, of learning how to come out of that inner world, because that inner world has, while it has solutions, it's so bundled up, they can't get to their own solutions. Because I personally believe every being has the answers already within them. It's not something about inserting something into their system. It's about helping their system unlock it, unwind, so the solution comes forward.
And from the horse's perspective, and I do have the benefit of having hundreds of sessions with horses who have forgotten a balanced partnership, you know, what that looks like, and have forgotten their original plan when they came in. And I've helped them go back to find that original plan. And they're always shocked, and so am I, moved that the original plan was always to help us feel our own heart, to help us shift out of fight or flight, to help us move out of our energy field, the stress and the monkey mind and the resistance, and give us a respite, give us a brief moment of time where we can breathe and we can feel ourself, and we can say to ourselves, I remember what that feels like. Or we can hear ourselves, give ourselves guidance, whether that be higher self or guides. Or we can hear the animals, or we can hear the guides of the animals. Or we cut out the noise and the projections of everyone else long enough to hear what the facilitator might have to say, what the therapist might have to say. But that's the beauty of the horse having a larger biomagnetic field, a larger heart whose capacity is greater than the human, to help us shift into a state, if possible, of a coherent heart rhythm, and to remember what it feels like to be at rest, to feel peace, or to find the sadness under the anger as you so beautifully illustrated in our last conversation with your client, anger is like the wall, or I'm not a psychiatrist, but we see many, many times that we express anger as a defense mechanism because there's sadness or there's brokenness or there's unforgiveness inside. And if the animal, if the horse, can hold a space long enough for us to let the anger go, then we can remember how we really feel inside. Now, yes, we're talking about specifically mental health, you know, self-awareness conversation. We're not talking about riding, what have you. But even then, even when it comes to riding, the horses say we were always meant to live in balanced partnership with humans, to be revered, to be cared for, to be appreciated for whatever service or partnership we were providing. Just as you or I would nurture a friendship or any partnership of sorts with anyone else, to honor, to respect, to witness the magnificence of one another as human beings, they want to be witnessed as well.
Well, and I think to do that, we have to be willing to take the metaphor off of them. We have to be willing to pick up that metaphor and hold that within ourselves. So we could say, wow, they're acting like such and such and such. This really reminds me of this. And then that horse doesn't have to keep holding that mirror, so to speak, up to us. And they don't have to, that's all that they are, is a metaphor, a walking label of whatever we put on them. It's they're able to start to say, okay, through this relationship, through this connection, you're going to have an opportunity to explore some areas in you that are working and some areas in you that are not working so great. And that also means you're going to have an opportunity to explore how those areas got that way. Because again, in my opinion, nothing happens in our system. We don't come up with a belief system, a habit, a posture, a way of being, an action. We don't do any of that, even within our cellular structure of our physical well-beingness. And that's a whole nother topic. Without a reason, our body is trying constantly to find balance, but it's constantly having to make choices off of three different levels, survival level. And then if it can answer that one, then it's willing to go up to like a personal gratification level or something like that. And then if it can answer that, then it can unlock that enlightenment level, that growth, that actualization level. But it won't go to the highest denominator until it can answer the lowest one. And so our system constantly is having to sacrifice its highest potential, its heart's desires for this survival one and making choices in there. The animals are doing the exact same thing. And so if we want them to show up the way Bear did, and that then the only way that Bear could have showed up as if he wasn't worried about his survival needs. He felt that his own personal desires as just a being were being honored. And then that third level, that magic sauce, as people like to call it, you know, Gene mentioned, I hear these things about these magical sessions with horses, and I didn't know what was happening. Well, those are the times where the ingredient gets balanced. It gets in the right connection point. And usually, despite the humans, like Bear, that whole session happened because luckily the angels grabbed me hard enough to be like, Michelle, time out, slow your roll, look at what's happening. Because the ego version of Michelle was about ready to go, oh, no, you did not. Just throw something at my horse. Snappy, snappy, snappy. It was not happy with that scenario that I was seeing. And I had my whole own trauma story wrapped up in it. But luckily, enough of presence across the board in all of us was there to allow that situation to present itself at its highest potential, where every being was able to step into exactly what the souls needed them to do to unlock their hearts. And that's the special sauce. When people come and witness me working with horses, or they come into my arena, or they work with me as clients or something else, and they say, Michelle, we don't know how you get from A to B. This is how. It's easy, but it's not easy because it takes an incredible amount of a leap of faith and humility to pull yourself out and allow the other souls to come in.
Now, absent this esoteric perspective that we're sharing right now, and I'm happy to honor the horses and give messages from them, but I feel like in order to finish the podcast and to accomplish what we want to accomplish and to accomplish sharing the profound information that you have accumulated over the last three decades, how can you describe the role of the horse, the role of the facilitator, the role of the client, assuming that not every program, in fact, a small number of them, operate in this way? There are many process-based, exercise-based programs that are being facilitated by people who are not as aware as you are, which is why so many people say, Michelle, I want to be like you. I want to do it like you. How can I do it like you? And my answer to that is to go on a journey of awakening and remember the truth of who you are and become self-aware and self-responsible as a human being first, and understand how the human psyche works, and understand how we adapt all of these coping mechanisms and belief systems that you were mentioning, Michelle, and then understand our energetic construct and the beingness and the three levels of awareness that you're talking about, of intelligence that we bring to the table, and then try. But so many people just want to take a one-week course and be certified, and that's it, and that's it. Now I can do this work.
And I'm not knocking that, because technically that was how I started. In the one program, I was required to do hours and internships and all this other stuff. But in the other one, it was at that point, it was a 3-day workshop. And I can't even imagine. And that's where I called it the program that I offered people that were mentoring people who were newly certified and certified for a long time in this field, looking to take their practice to the next level. It was called Now What? Because they went to a certification, they sat through 3 days, 5 days, whatever, and they went home to their barn and nothing looked like what they, and they were like, oh my gosh, now what? Now what do I do? You know, I got a horse, I got a client, I got a, you know, I've sold people on the fact that I think I can do change their life in 12 sessions, which is the number one thing I would say let go of. They just were really lost. And where I had to keep starting with all of them, it was the very questions you just asked, which is what is the roles? And so once people were willing to let go of the fact that the horse was supposed to magically always make somebody feel better, that that was the horse's job, or was supposed to piss them off to the point where they problem solve, either one of those extremes, and they were willing to say, okay, I think the horse's job is to start a conversation and to help them have a conversation and a connection and a communication. And through that conversation, the healing, however that needed to be, physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual, would come forward, and that they have the right to say yes, no, and maybe. And they weren't these mythical healers that were responsible for sponging the person's sadness away. There's a meme that I saw going around Facebook for a while, and everybody loved it. It was like the woman was coming into the barn in this little character, and she had this big cloud over her, and she was sad and she was upset. And the horse blew, whew, the little puffed cloud away from the person. And then over the horse, it says, that's my job, fees, carrots. And so what is, if we really slow that down, that meme was saying that that horse's job was to make that human feel happy, poof, feel happy. And yes, you could be saying, well, Michelle, it was just a meme and it was supposed to be funny. But the problem is that meme actually said everything in two little comic blocks, which is that horses, their job is to carry our burdens for us, to dissolve our burdens away from us. Well, what happens to them? You know, how do they then take that on? And can you really do that? And here's the thing that I don't know how else to say, but to say it, is we can't heal anybody else's stuff for anybody. It's impossible. You can't do it. And so if we take this on, and many of us, as children, we're taught to do this. I call it to be a Swiffer sweeper for people. And so it's natural then that we're assigning a similar role to a horse, because unfortunately we have been taught as humans that it's our job to do the same thing. Poof, let me blow your sadness away. Poof, let me take this from you. Let me carry your burden for you. But that doesn't help me solve how that burden got there in the first place, what it is. And then it just sits like a lead balloon in somebody else's field. And they can't salt bath that away. They can't sage that away. They can't om or ah that away. It just sits there causing an incredible amount of, quote, dis-ease in their system, which eventually equals true dis-ease. The idea that the horse's job is to make us feel better, and that if they don't do that, then they're, quote, not doing their job and they're a bad horse, is myth number one that really has to get busted up for them to step into their true role, which their role is there to help illuminate, to bring conversations to the surface, to bring forward different ways in which we partner with ourselves and other beings that are balanced and healthy or unbalanced and not healthy. And then how do we start to shift that and move that? Now, that is a modality choice of everybody of how they decide to work with that. And that's where the next piece comes in. You need to have a human. You need to have a facilitator, a mental health person, a coach, a teacher, something like that. Their job is to help answer the questions, hold the space, keep track of all of the different moving parts, and keep inviting the person into the level of reflection that works for them, holding that space, being curious, let them unwind the ball. Because if they unwind the ball for them, then the person never learns to do anything. They just keep having to keep coming back and taking the horse pill every week to help themselves feel better versus helping their system actually eventually get there on its own. And so what's the role of the person? The person, the client, the participant is to have to whatever level is appropriate. Because again, I work with from like 6 years old to 60 plus years, you know, what is the level of responsibility and knowledge and ability to have self-reflection that matches where they are at, and having that conversation and being willing to do what I call the U-turn. If they keep pushing it onto the horse was stubborn, the horse was mean, the horse is this, I call a timeout and I go, well, you know, out here, I'm going to ask you to do a U-turn, because we can't just say the horse is acting that way. We have to look at our own self, see what's creating that in ourselves of what the horse is then responding to in that connection and that dance of connection. So time out, let's leave the horse alone. Let's do a little reflection over here. Then we'll go back in and try again, whatever the heck it is that you were up to in that dance of connection. That is the role. And we ask our clients into whatever level they can do, are you willing to take that responsibility on? Are you willing to look inward as to what is making up the choices and the viewpoints and the interactions? And are you willing to get curious? And are you willing to explore and realize that your system can talk to you? And that this horse's job is really to help you have this conversation, but the only person who can truly have it is you. Just like we're here to help you, the horse is here to help you. At the end of the day, the buck stops with you and your system. But we'll be here for however long it takes to work our way through that. And if we can start to see things from that role, whether you're riding or not, and in our program, clients can earn their saddles is what I call it. But the earn the saddles is the relationship has come to the point where the horse says, hey, I want to help you work with vulnerability and connection and communication on a whole nother level. Because in our program, when you swing that leg over the horse is saying, hey, I know that you're going to be nice to me. You're not going to ask me to do something that's going to get me in harm's way. And I am going to try to keep you safe too, because I care about you. And the person's agreeing, hey, I'm sitting in this vulnerable spot and I can start to be really controlling or nasty to you, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to come at it from a place of partnership, request, connection, communication. And it's a whole nother level that honestly is quite mind-blowing for a lot of people that you can ride from that level. But it's very true and it's very real, and it can happen all across the board from unmounted to mounted if we allow space for the horse to show up as a true being, an autonomous being.
Now, just for the record, you do have licensed clinical therapists working with you on your ranch. It's not just you. You have a staff.
Yeah. So it all depends on which side of the program you come in. But on the psychotherapy side of the program, yes, we have mental health professionals that work with us.
I just wanted to make sure everybody knew and understood that. Do you feel like you want to share anything else in wrapping up this piece today?
I think what I want to share is this really is, if we're going to continue to evolve ourselves and then allow that evolution to another being. These are the questions that our heart needs to start to soften and to open up to. The word healing has really become desirable in this world. And it's become desirable because we all don't want to suffer. We want to alleviate the suffering from our own systems that are physical, that are mental, that are emotional, that are spiritual. And there has become a myth that it is a horse itself has the ability to alleviate that suffering from us. And it has created a savior complex in this field. The horses have a message that they really want everyone to hear. And the message is that they are not your savior, that they are willing to partner with you. Some of them are willing to partner with us to help us save ourselves. They are not magical healers that can heal somebody. They are not beasts of burden. They're a being just like you and I. And if you talk to any quote healer, one, they won't accept that title. And then two, they will say to you, it is not me that heals you. It is you that heals yourself. I help hold the space. I help you unwind it. But ultimately, it's between you and your soul. And that is the same message from the horse.
Very well said. It's something that passes my lips every day, multiple times a day, and in every class I teach. I watched a video by someone I had a lot of respect for recently who shared, and I think the title of the video was How Animals Heal You or How You're, something like that. A few minutes into the video, she said, my animal was my savior. My animal healed me of this disease. And what the woman doesn't realize is that it's just going to come around another way. Because as you said, and as the animals say, and as I say all day long to people when we're talking about going to healers or psychics or facilitators or intuitives, no one can forgive you but you. No one can unburden you but you. No one can dissolve your judgments but you. No one can affect your consciousness but you. We can suffer for one another all day, every day. And so many animals come to me and say, I've taken on this human energy. Now I don't know what to do with it. What do I do now? Innocent enough, well-intended, loving, compassionate animals. But they don't know what to do with it once they take it on. For the most part, there are a few out there who are really rocking being their horse being. And that's true. It's very rare. It's very rare. I thank you, Michelle, so much for showing up again today. I invite the listeners to return again next week to have another conversation with me, because now is the time for interspecies evolution. The information provided in this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional, medical, psychiatric, or veterinary advice. Our conversations are based on our life's experiences. We intend this podcast to be complementary and supportive. It is not intended to be a substitute for traditional medical, psychiatric, or veterinary care. If you need a doctor, a psychiatrist, or a veterinarian, please contact one immediately.